This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Now, the man behind one of the most successful concept albums ever is Jeff Wayne. War of the Worlds remains one of the best-selling albums of all time in the UK, with sales well in excess of 2.5 million, and spent a staggering 330 weeks in the album charts. Last year, Jeff decided to return to his score and recreate it for a new generation of audiences, producing Jeff Wayne's musical version of The War of the Worlds, The New Generation. Well, I'm pleased to say that joining me on the line now is musician, writer and composer Jeff Wayne. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
Well, it's great to talk to you today. Now, a live tour based on the album began in the UK and Ireland in April 2006, and you've continued to tour the show up until earlier this year. Now, I think you have some news you're announcing for us today, Jeff.
Well, yes, indeed. We are going to tour again next year, about a year from now, and the difference, though, is that we're announcing it as the final arena tour, which I say with heavy heart, because I've had a fantastic run conducting and creating the shows. But equally, on the flip side, is that we're going to be taking the War of the Worlds into new directions, which we'll be able to announce after that next tour, and I hope it will be as exciting a challenge as the live arena tours have been. And you know, you never say never, but for the moment, this looks like our last arena tour.
Ah, well, I was going to ask, why is it going to be the last ever arena tour? But it's not the end, then.
It's not the end, not as we know it.
Good, good. Okay, so who's going to be in the cast for this production?
Well, so far we have three of the five live roles that are cast. One is returning, Jason Donovan. This will be his third tour with us. We have Brian McFadden from Westlife.
Excellent.
And a most wonderful singer-actress named Carrie Hope Fletcher, who's playing Eponine in Les Miserables in the West End at the moment.
Right.
She's the most beautiful artist. Her brother is, in fact, Tom Fletcher from McFly.
Oh, yes, right. Yeah.
And now McBusted.
Yeah.
So those are the three that are currently definite. We do know who the a fourth one is, but we can't yet announce it just because of contractual reasons.
Okay.
And that will leave one last role to be signed. But we're actually, by being a year away, we're way ahead of where we've been on previous tours in securing guest artists, so we've just been fortunate in that respect.
Sure. Okay. Okay, well, we'll come back to the tour later, but I'd like to talk to you about what led up to the original album. I know that back in the 70s you had a very successful career, writing around 3,000 advertising jingles that appeared on television in the UK, and notably a Gordon's Gin commercial that was covered by the Human League. You also composed many well-known television themes, including ITV's The Big Match. So what inspired you at that time to start work on a concept album?
Well, firstly, the amount of media work that I was doing was literally for about a 10-year period round the clock. It was, I'm not far off when I say 24/7, and it was a fantastic challenge because some people knew me as a rock composer, others as classical, others somebody as electronic. But I was also producing David Essex at the time, and David wrote pretty much all of his own material, so I was producing and arranging and then conducting on his tours. And as a composer, I had a period where I was so busy with David that writing bigger things was starting to diminish, and it was my dad, in fact, who reminded me that one of my own aspirations as a composer and a producer was to find a story that I could feel passionate about and interpret in my own way as a composer and a producer. And I agreed with him, and we started reading a whole range of books, not just science fiction genre. And literally the night before going out on one of the tours with David, he came over just to wish me luck for the tour and handed me this book, H.G. Wells' The War of the Worlds.
Right. And
it was the first book I read that just jumped out at me. It had everything that I was looking for as a composer, as an arranger, and to start with a blank canvas and interpret it was a possible dream. But it was then, it still is, in copyright. So, and of course, no internet, no email in those days. So it took us about 3 months to trace who was representing the estate of H.G. Wells, who passed away in 1946. And By good fortune, the estate was impressed by the fact that I wanted to stay true to H.G. Wells' story, keep it as this dark Victorian tale,
right,
rather than setting it in contemporary America, which it seems movies and other things that had been done previously always changed. So we got the rights, and then that was really the beginning of how I started to compose and produce The War of the Worlds.
Right, right. And what do you think the enduring success of the album is due to? Massive sales over the years, it's been.
Yeah, if you had asked me before it came out, how did I think it was going to do, I would have answered you quite honestly that I wasn't even sure it was going to get a release, because
right,
CBS, who I was signed to, and they put up about a third of the money, I had to go deep into my life savings to complete the other two-thirds, which was quite a serious risk.
Sure.
But to add to that, CBS didn't have any obligation to release it. What they had was a right to listen, and they had to decide in 30 days if they liked it enough to even give it a release.
Wow. Yeah.
And I waited, as you can imagine, quite with trepidation
yeah,
for 30 days with my wife, my family, and 30 days came up, and they asked for another 30 days. Eventually, they did come back, and they loved it, and they said, it's totally unique, and we're going to release it.
Yeah.
As to how it was going to do, nobody knew. We did get two very big hit singles all over the world, so it suddenly sounded like a pop record rather than the double album, which was continuous play recording, no cuts in it. Themes, songs, sounds, storyline came and went and integrated and overlapped, and it just resonated, and
yeah,
it resonated in many countries of the world. So that was the unexpected result. And to answer your question directly, I think it was just that. It did resonate as something different.
I think so, yeah.
You know, it came out at the height, and in the era when it was the height of the punk revolution, and disco was king of the dance floor. And there I am with this double album. And, you know, you mentioned concept album, and it's been called that many times. It's been called prog rock, rock opera. And I had no thought whatsoever it being any of those things. It was just, to me, a musical interpretation that lasted this length of time, and nothing more than that. And
sure, yeah.
So even that has had its own quirky little history of what it's perceived at.
Yeah. And, of course, you got Richard Burton on board on the project originally. He originally voiced the journalist. How did he get involved in the project?
Well, when I finished the first draft of my score, it sort of paralleled the first draft of our script that was adapting the H.G. Wells novel from notes that I'd scribbled in the copy of the book that I still have to this day, or underlines or little ideas that I handed to our scriptwriter. And the one role of the cast of characters that grew from that was, or I should say, the one role that was a pure acting role, all the others turned out to be primarily singing roles,
right,
was that of a journalist who had survived this Martian invasion some 6 years earlier. So he's in 1904 recounting his story of survival for his newspaper. And I definitely was hoping to attract an actor whose voice, the second you heard it, took you into our world of the War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
So that from that very first word, hopefully the listener would be hooked and stay with us for the length of the double album. I didn't have a particularly big list, but Richard's name was at the very top of it. And just at that point in time, some friends of ours had just returned from New York from having been on holiday, and had just seen Richard in a play called Equus.
Right.
And I thought, ooh, you know, if you're in a show, you're doing probably 8 shows a week, you're spending a lot of time in one theater. So what I did was I wrote him a letter, introduced myself, explained what I was doing with The War of the Worlds, and included a copy of the script as it existed, and said, please, would you consider being the journalist?
Yeah.
But I sent it to the stage door of the theater, hoping that the man in charge there would actually hand Richard my little care package, and hope that it would reach Richard, hope that he would respond favorably to it, and hope that he'd say yes, and we could actually strike up a deal.
Yeah.
2 or 3 days after my package arrived, I got a call from a man named Robert Lentz, who was Richard's manager at the time, And to my stunned amazement, he said, Richard loves the idea, and the exact words, which I'll never forget, were, count him in, dear boy. And that was it. It was
fantastic.
Probably the easiest arrangement, contract to organize, because all the others were major musical artists, all with managers, all with agents, all with record labels, and the layers that one had to go through once you finally even had somebody interested was humongous, and it just was a delight, and as it was to work with Richard.
Fantastic, yeah. Now, you mentioned David Essex earlier. He worked on the album with you, along with Phil Lynott as well, I believe.
Absolutely correct, yeah. And David, because I was working with him, was a lot easier to get to, obviously, because we were mates. We were working together all the time. I still demoed it for all the musical guest artists, in fact, not to presume that they can just fall in love with an idea, so I had to demo and play them everything that was relevant to what they would be performing, David included. Phil, I didn't know, and I was introduced to him through a mutual contact. He came into the studio, heard the same sort of demos that everybody else was hearing for all the different parts, and he loved the idea of it. He asked me why him that I would even approach, and I reminded him of a track called Fool's Gold that he recorded,
right,
which starts off maybe 15, 20 seconds, where he's speaking quite dramatically.
Okay.
And coupled with this incredible rock voice,
yeah,
to me, he was an ideal Parson Nathaniel.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, Forever Autumn became a UK top five single, sung by Justin Hayward. And Justin's been on some of the tours with you as well, hasn't he?
He was on every tour from the beginning until the last tour, when we turned the production into the New Generation production, which parallel the New Generation recording, and on the new recording, Gary Barlow played that same role that Justin did, and on stage on the last tour was Marty Pella.
The summer sun is fading as the year grows old, and darker days are drawing near. The winter wind will be much colder now you're not here.
More of the Worlds went on to become a massive commercial success, as we said earlier, but it also won several awards, including two Ivor Novellos. Did you enjoy that?
Of course I did.
Yeah.
What's not to enjoy?
Absolutely. Right, so in 2006 you decided to take the album on tour. Why did it take so long to get it on the road?
Well, I think mostly it was the fact that technology had moved on to the point where it was the War of the Worlds as a canvas is such a big story that what I always had in my mind was something that required scale and technology to achieve that.
Yeah.
Even though you could do it, and it's been done hundreds of times by schools and amateur societies in the smallest possible way, for me to want to do it initially, I was waiting for the, not deliberately waiting every day, so to speak, but I was watching technology evolve. And it was around 2005 that I started realizing this was achievable now.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity to conduct a full performance and concert version at the Royal Albert Hall, and it sold out in about 2 hours with the box office reporting to our promoters that there was enough demand for about 10 to 12 additional shows, but
wow,
they couldn't offer us any dates.
Right.
And our promoters asked me, they said, well, do you have any other ideas that could take it from a concert rendition to a much bigger scale production that could play arenas? And we could probably book you in 6 or 7 of them.
Mm.
And I had been working on it, but no target date. And I had a studio full of all these models and things that were very much ready to be shown to people. I had a storyboard that broke it down like a movie storyboard, frame by frame. So I said, come on over to my studio, have a look, see what you think. And they loved it when they came over. And they said, that's it. That's what you need to sort of put together. Can you do it in the time frame that I had between then and what was April 2006? Because I was booked into the Royal Albert Hall.
Yeah.
And I said, sure I could. And then they left, and I started to cry. I realized, what did I just say?
Yeah.
But we did. I was able to be introduced to an amazing crew of people who have worked in all forms of live entertainment. And because I had done quite a lot of preliminary work, it was adaptable.
Yeah.
and what was 6 or 7 arena tours or so, they thought grew into 15.
Wow, yeah.
And after that, it just took off, and we've now been as far as Australia and New Zealand, around Europe. We've just had our first tour of the U.S. offered to us, which if we can make happen, we're going to before this last arena tour comes to its conclusion. So it's had a life that has been sort of like the album in a way, not expected.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a big show, isn't it? I imagine with a huge amount of kit to transport around the country and set up at each venue. How many people are usually involved in the production?
If you include everybody that who's on stage, we are, including crew, riggers, truckers, those who feed us, we're about 120 people.
Wow, yeah.
And the scale of the things that the audience sees is humongous.
I've seen, yeah.
Yeah, and yet it's designed to pack up and be in the next city the very next night if needed. While we do multiple shows in some cities, we do many that are just one-nighters, and you're in the next city the next night.
Yes.
And it's the skill of those who move us around and design and all of that which makes it achievable.
Fantastic, yeah. Now, how did the new generation come about last year, and why make a new version of such a beloved classic album?
It's a good question. It's a fair question. And in fact, in the several years leading up to me finally thinking, yes, it should be done, I had that very atypical knee-jerk reaction about being asked, well, if you were going to do it today, how would you do it? And my normal answer was, it ain't broke, so I'm not even thinking trying to fix it.
Yeah.
But I was being asked that fairly regularly, and I think it was because we started to prove that it worked in the arenas. The album just kept going on and on. We've had hit singles, but we've also had over 300 club renditions of it from when it was disco right up into current musical trends from the clubs.
Sure. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think when somebody else is interpreting something you've created, you're maybe two different things. One is it's an excitement to see how somebody else has interpreted it, and the other side is if it's not very good, you wince a bit. But
yeah.
I've been fortunate that most of them have been really quite exciting and pleased with many of the renditions, and some of them have crossed over into big club hits, even on the singles chart. So generally speaking, it's been fascinating, but I couldn't have predicted that. But coming back to your question, why the new generation? We finished a tour in 2010, just before Christmas, and I had a little family holiday booked, and because it had been going on for a few years, these sort of questions, I took with me on holiday the original script that I had recorded with Richard Burton.
Right.
And I reread it, and it was the first time I really read it in its entirety since the original sessions. And it reminded me how much rich material there was that didn't make it onto the original album and therefore all the tours to date. And we had already been booked to what became known as the New Generation Tour, which is the one we did last year and finished early this year.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, if there's going to be a time to do it, this might be the time. And the story, just like it was first time around, is what really got me going. And I started working on it. And just as a statistic, to give you an idea, Richard has 74 sequences that appear on the album and therefore the tours, whereas Liam Neeson, who is our new journalist, he has 90.
Right.
So it gives you an idea, just as a stat, how much the story has expanded and therefore my score. And by the score needing to be expanded or wanting to be expanded, I'm now into the territory of new technology, a brand new recording of musical interpretation, and of course, a whole new cast of characters.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like a set of dominoes. You know, you start one thing off and the whole thing starts to go, and that was the final sort of tick of the boxes that said, right, okay, let's go for it. I was very conscious that there could be a negative reaction. Why am I tampering with something, a recording that many people have come to know and has lasted the course and come to see our shows? But I also knew from all the tours we were doing that there was a story there that should be expanded to take us further along the road and musically challenge me and to work in ways that music and technology have changed. So I found it exciting as a musician. I found it exciting as a producer. And all I could do is hope that I would take along with me the largest amount of people that have stayed with me all these years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Our last tour was our most successful in terms of quantity of shows, the amount of people that came to see the War of the Worlds, so I hope we did more right than wrong.
Right. So you're going to be a busy man next year. The tour kicks off in Dublin in November, and in just 20 days you'll get to Liverpool, Glasgow, Manchester, Nottingham, Newcastle, Birmingham, Leeds, Cardiff, Bournemouth. You'll be doing two concerts at the O2 Arena on Saturday the 13th of December, then Brighton and off to Amsterdam to finish on the 16th of December. I believe tickets go on sale on Friday. And as if that wasn't enough, you've also got a DVD and a Blu-ray coming out next week. Tell us about that, Jeff.
Well, the DVD Blu-ray was filmed at the O2 in London as part of our last tour.
Right.
And it represents the new generation production, so our next tour is going to be an advancement on that, but it's very exciting. And for anybody who would have seen the first productions, they'll know how much the War of the Worlds has moved on,
right?
That's what the DVD and Blu-ray is all about.
It's that production,
yeah.
Right, and it'll all be available from your website. Yeah, that's www.thewaroftheworlds.com. That's fantastic, Jeff. Good luck with the tour next year, and thanks so much for talking to us today on Phoenix FM. I wish you every success with the tour and whatever it's going to develop into afterwards.
All right.
That's a mystery.
All right. Well, Bob, thank you very much. It's been lovely to speak with you, and wish you all the best.
Excellent. Same to you. Thanks, okay. Jeff. Bye-bye.
Bye.
No one would have believed in the last years of the 19th century that human affairs were being watched by intelligences which inhabited the timeless worlds of space. No one could have dreamed we were being scrutinized as someone with a microscope studies creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water. Few men even considered the possibility of life on other planets. And yet, across the gulf of space, minds immeasurably superior to ours regarded this earth with envious eyes. And slowly and surely, they drew their plans against us.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
98 FM.